I'm Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Jonathan Stahn with SpectraCell Laboratories, and we're going to talk about, continue the talk we did last week on SpectraCell testing and talk about telomeres. How are you, Dr. Stahn?
Hi, Eva. I'm doing great tonight. Thanks for having me on again.
Thanks for taking the time to be with us. I really appreciate it.
So, my pleasure.
Can you hear me okay? Is there a delay or anything? Is it good?
No, it sounds good.
Okay, good. So first of all, before we get started, tell everybody, for people that didn't hear us last week, where they can find SpectraCell and what SpectraCell does and what you do.
Oh, sure. That'd be great. Well, SpectraCell Laboratories is a diagnostic laboratory. We're based in Houston, Texas. Our webpage is www.spectracell.com. That's SpectraCell.com. We do nutritional diagnostic testing and cardiovascular disease risk testing. And now we're starting to get into anti-aging testing, which is really, it's really new and it's really exciting stuff.
And I know that we went into detail about this last week, so I'll tell anybody if you have any questions, start out listening, go back to the archives and listen to last week. But briefly tell us why your testing is different than any other laboratory.
Well, we've been trying really hard to stay on the kind of advancing edge of a diagnostic research. We're trying really hard to sort of build new microscopes and build new ways of, building new mousetraps and kind of look at new ways in which to assess health. You know, as new discoveries are made about biological characteristics that may play an important role in our health, our immune health, which I'm sure you'll talk to Dr. Troop next week, I guess, on the cardiovascular disease testing, you know, not just how much cholesterol you have, but how it's being utilized by your body, and now how fast your cells are aging. You know, like, this is it's really an exciting time. In a certain sense, diagnostics is sort of galloping ahead of treatment, but it's an exciting place to be.
And what is your background, Jonathan?
My background, I have a PhD in molecular genetics from UT. So I'm basically have a strong background in cancer genetics, some statistical genetics, biochemistry, that sort of thing. So that's where I'm coming from a scientific place.
I never thought to ask you this before. Do you know my friend Mark Naveau?
Oh, that name sounds so familiar. In what context?
Well, he kind of does what you do, I think. Something similar to that anyway.
It's a vanishingly small world.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of thought you might know each other. Anyway, okay, what is a telomere?
Okay, so telomere, the word comes from the Greek telos and meros, which means end part, and it's the end part of your chromosomes. And what telomeres do is they basically protect your chromosomes from unraveling or recombining with each other. So they play a very, very important role in protecting that. And the important thing to say about telomeres is that every time your cells divide, they get a little bit shorter. Telomeres. There's no way to sort of repair or replace the endmost part of your telomeres.
Is it kind of like a cap on a pen? Just so people understand what you're talking about.
Oh, sure, yeah. The other analogy everyone uses all the time are shoelace tips, the little caps on your shoelaces, the little plastic bit that keeps them from unraveling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, every time your cells divide, whether it's for repair or replacement or as an immune response, you know, anytime your cells have to divide, your telomeres get a little bit shorter, and eventually they get so short that a signal gets sent to your cells, to that particular cell, and it stops dividing. Okay, it no longer replicates. It stays alive and it just sort of sits there until it dies. It goes into a state that's called senescence. And there's a thought that as you age, your telomeres get shorter and shorter and shorter, and the number of cells that have reached this limit accumulate. So less and less of your cells are dividing. Fewer and fewer are available for repair or replacement. And so this is thought to be one of the kind of important components of aging.
Is it how many you have, or is it the state of the individual telemere?
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, I think that research is really ongoing. I know people are looking at asking the question, what is the shortest telomere? Is it having a single very short telomere sufficient to send the signal for your cells to stop dividing? Or is it just a function of the average length? I'm not sure that's been really teased out yet.
So we did this testing on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned all of these tests, and I've learned so much. So on your test results page, your telomere length, it goes
mm-hmm.
from 0 to 10. What is
mm-hmm.
that? Zero to 10 of what?
Okay. Well, the way we do this is we talk about a telomere score. So everyone, so the average telomere length of a newborn is about 10,000 base pairs long. It's 10,000 base pairs of repetitive telomere DNA, just the sort of structural repeating sequence of about 6 base pairs over and over and over and over and over. And again, this number just goes down over time. There's an average length. And, again, as people get older, their telomeres, sort of inevitably as their cells divide, get shorter and shorter and shorter. The initial range is something like, I think the highest is somewhere around 15,000 base pairs, and the lowest you can see is something around 3,000 base pairs. And we use a calculated value, based on the techniques we use to measure telomeres, and we get a calculated telomere score, which is essentially the length in thousands of base pairs.
Okay.
So, like, a telomere score of 6 would be, 6,000 base pairs of calculated telomere length.
And what we'll just talk about mine. Mine is 7.37. I'll be
mm-hmm.
50 years old in 2 weeks, so what does that tell me? Does that tell me I'm halfway done? Does that tell me I'm a little better than average? Does that tell me I'm a little sicker than average? What does that tell me?
Right. Well, the number itself isn't, I don't feel it's that important. You've got a score, and the score only really matters relative to your age cohort. That is to say, how well are you performing compared to other people your age?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And what does mine tell me?
Well, here you are at the 70th percentile, so you're a little bit above the top two-thirds of individuals of your age. So that means you're doing pretty well. You're in the top third of performance, right? And that means, in general, your cells are holding up pretty well given your age.
Okay. So now my question is, we also did the micronutrient testing on me, and we also
mm-hmm.
did the lipoprotein particle profile.
Mm-hmm.
So my lipoprofile said to me, you have some cholesterol issues
mm-hmm.
and a little some metabolic syndrome traits.
Mm-hmm.
What about this telomere length is reflected in those tests, if anything? Is there a connection?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Like, in general, there are three things that seem to go into telomere. There are three things that seem to go with an increased rate of telomere shortening. Things that will make your telomere shorter. Oxidative damage, which is, one of the things we test for with our total antioxidant function. And we talked a little bit about that last week. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, the poorer your body's ability to deal with oxidative stresses, the more your cells are going to be damaged and have to be replaced, and so your telomeres are going to get shorter based on that. Inflammation, and the ELPP test is certainly kind of measures some of the factors involved, just like any other cholesterol test, with inflammation. And that can foreshorten your telomeres, and I guess, being sedentary is another issue, right? But relative to the telomere test results, it shows that your cell's rate of aging is pretty much okay. Like, you're holding up fairly well. We don't know how fast your telomeres are decreasing at any given moment, because we only have one, we've only measured it at one point in time. So your telomeres, you could have been doing really, really, really well for the last, say, 40 years, and only in the last couple years have things started to decline. And we'll have to do other measurements over time right, to see where you're going. In just the same way that, say, men get their PSA testing and they're looking for sort of the rate of what their PSA is doing, right? That could be more important than any given single point.
Have you did any other people at all where you've done one, say, every 6 months or every year on a certain segment of people or a certain number of people?
Well, here's the thing about it. We started this test. We've been doing the test for about, 6 months now? A little less than 6 months.
Is that new? Wow.
Yeah, it's really new. In August, there was a paper. There was sort of a debate that got published in one of the journals about whether whether extending telomeres is a good idea or it's a bad idea, you know, whether using sort of medical intervention to extend your telomeres made sense. And so it's so new, but there's a lot of scientific questions that we're still teasing out at this point. It's really exciting, but it's also really ahead of the curve.
I bet it would be exciting to go to work every day if you did that.
Yeah, I'm so fascinated. What I think is going to happen, and this is sort of my kind of collective vision of where this is all going, is that we're going to develop a bunch of different assays to see how well your cells are aging on a bunch of different aspects, right? How well your DNA can repair itself, you know, what your level of oxidative stresses are and how your body deals with it. Like, we'll develop this huge array of ways of looking at sort of cellular health. And then we'll be able to, further on down the road, be able to evaluate, well, people doing this sort of lifestyle intervention seem to improve like this. People on this sort of medical intervention improve like that. And, you know, by developing the ability to look at how your cells are doing, you'll be able to know what works and what doesn't work. And maybe for some populations, one approach will be effective, and maybe for other populations, another will.
Mm-hmm.
But until we can measure it, we really don't know.
And where do you get your funding? I'm just curious.
So this is one of the great joys of SpectraCell is that we're a diagnostic lab. So patients, you know, people who are interested in their nutrition level, people who are interested in their knowing what their cardiovascular health risk status, we have an R&D budget based on our profits and our success as a company. So we develop tests for clinicians who are really very forward-looking, who want to ask the question, well, you know, how I've got patients, they want their, you know, for some of them who have fairly selective clientele, you know, they're very successful, they're doing a lot of things, they want to continue to feel healthy, they want to continue to age well, right? And those clinicians are really the ones saying, oh, you know, we'd really, you know, my patients, you know, like, we'd be really fascinated if you could develop this test. It's really very client-driven. But, yeah, our funding is basically, you know, it's an R&D budget based on developing the business of developing advanced diagnostic testing.
All right, back to the questions then.
Mm-hmm.
Is telomere shortening, are people born with short telomeres? Do you know?
Well, you know, I would expect, I mean, you know, but certainly there's a range. Like, we know that when you look at newborns or if you look at the young, you know, some people start with fairly large telomeres. Some people start with slightly shorter ones. We know that they all go down over time. But again, the technology is very new. I would expect to see two populations. I would really bet that there's populations of people who have really long telomeres and maybe it goes down at a faster rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there may be a population of people who have maybe slightly shorter telomeres, but maybe it's going down at a slower rate, you know, just based on their kind of, you know, unique genetic signature or their, you know, their lifestyle or sort of their biochemical individuality is what we sort of describe as sort of the overarching.
So you expect to see that there are genetic issues and inflammatory problems, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We know that both of them will contribute to foreshortened telomeres.
Okay, right. If we want to support healthy telomeres, how
mm-hmm.
do we do it? Isn't there a specific enzyme, telomerase, connected to it? And how do we support that? Enzymes, amino acids, minerals, what? How do we help it?
Oh, that's a fantastic question.
You made me feel smart when you say that. Thank you. You're the one with the PhD in molecular genetics.
Oh, pshaw, I just work here. All right, let me break it down for you. There's two real issues that we're talking about here. One, we want to protect our telomeres from getting shorter. Right? How can we protect that? Essentially, it's the question, how can you protect your cells? Right? Because anytime your cells are damaged, you're destroyed. The other cells have to divide to repair and replace them, and your average telomeres are getting shorter. Right? The three, and, you know, I guess I discussed them a little bit earlier. You know, oxidative damage is a big one. So we know that having good antioxidant function, taking antioxidants, or rather I should say, taking the antioxidants that you know your body needs.
What are antioxidants? What are those? What do we look towards when we say that word?
Okay, really I'm referring to both the phytochemicals and sort of the supplements, vitamin A, E, C, selenium, and so forth.
Okay.
That protect your body from free radical damage. As a result of sort of being alive and having a metabolism and sort of being exposed to all sorts of different environmental insults, your body will generate essentially free electrons or free radicals that can go around and damage your proteins and damage your DNA. You know, they're sort of associated with cancer risk and so forth. The antioxidants, and this can be, you know, this could be from diet, say like lycopenes from tomatoes or resveratrol from, where do you get those from? Red grapes and green teas, right? Your vitamins A, E, C, selenium, and so forth. One of the things they do is they sort of act as sponges, and they will absorb and neutralize free radicals. So they protect your DNA and your protein from being damaged by them.
Does that have to do with charge?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, again, it has to do, you know, essentially, getting back into basic, this is sort of some high school chemistry stuff.
For you,
essentially, you've got ions in your body and again, like, you know, sort of sodium chloride, where sodium has a positive charge and chloride has a negative charge. When they come together, they're neutral and they're totally happy. Well, you'll get molecules floating around that are just half of that, sort of half of that combination. And they're really, really, really looking for a partner, essentially. You know, like those positive charges and negative charges want to find each other and they want to balance out. And so, they can strip those from, parts of your body that have other applications. And they can sort of, and again, they can damage your cells in the process.
Okay.
So that's a big, you know, so that's something to be protective of. You know, again, if you take the antioxidants you need and not kind of imbalance your system, so finding out what you need is important. That's one of the things we do with
SpectraCell, the mineral test, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do antioxidant testing, and we can kind of give people specific recommendations for what their body needs. Right. I mean, you can kind of try flying blind, but if you're giving your body what it doesn't need, you can induce imbalances, and it's you know, you're really taking shots in the dark. It's much better to give your body what it needs.
Back to the telomerase enzyme. What is that, and what does it do, and what else
can
you suggest for it?
Right. So there's two approaches, really. Again, you can protect your body, like, you know, again, being heart healthy, taking antioxidants, you know, engaging in moderate exercise. Those have all been shown to protect your telomeres from being damaged. So that's it's good for your body, and it turns out that's because it's good for your body at the cellular level too. So no big shocker there. But if you the other route, there's an enzyme called telomerase, and it's activated normally in your germline cells. So in a woman's eggs or a man's sperm, this enzyme is active. And what it does is it rebuilds the telomeres. So it ensures that sort of everybody and at every generation at the start, like, you know, when an egg and a sperm fuse to form a, you know, a person, or pre-person, their telomeres have been reset to about 15,000 base pairs, give or take. So that enzyme rebuilds it. So the question becomes, that enzyme gets turned off during fetal development. Right, which is why your telomeres get shorter and shorter. It's not active in humans post-conception.
And you can't.
And so
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and so the question becomes, you know, are there ways to reactivate that enzyme, and is that a good thing? Well, there's two companies. let's see, I think TA Sciences has a product, it's called TA65, and then I know there's a company called Sierra that's working on one. I don't know if they've marketed a product yet or if they're just working on it, but there are companies out there kind of developing treatments that will reactivate telomerase. And so they're very excited in what we're doing because, you know, we're identifying individuals who may have four shortened telomeres, and we're kind of excited in what they're doing because they're developing treatments for this new diagnostic test. And so, it's some interesting stuff.
Do you know what they've found out so far? Is it optimistic? Or would we want to turn them back on, or would it cause things to proliferate?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And again, like I said, that debate's going on in scientific journals as of, you know, 2 months ago.
What do your friends say?
What?
I don't look at the journals so much because they say what their editors tell them, but what do your friends say?
I suppose. I'm inherently very, very cautious. I mean, you know, when human growth hormone hit the rage, and that was like a big deal. You know, like, there's a question, like, should adults be taking human growth hormone? And you have people who are reporting their individual, you know, reporting their individual status, for having more energy and feeling more alive and really, you know, kind of going back to a younger place,
mm-hmm.
right? And I've certainly heard that's true for people taking telomerase. Yeah, we don't know what the long-term risks are because no one's been doing it long-term. You know, again, we're right in the middle of this kind of exciting time. And so, you know, like, I am a big fan of informed consent. You know, people should know what the risks are.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what they want to do, they're certainly entitled to do it. I know that those companies have tried really hard to make sure that everybody who's on this regimen is informed, right? But we really don't know what the risks are. And so that's a balancing act. I mean, that's absolutely exactly where it is right now, to my understanding.
Have they been, I guess what I really want to know is, are they seeing success at all, do you know?
You hear reports, you hear individual anecdotes of people just glowing with it. I can tell you that, boy, if they put me on that, you know, like if I could get a prescription for that stuff, I would take it. I think it's really cool.
Okay.
But
what about, you brought up...
Recognizing the risk of it.
You accept that. And by the way, Dr. Stein is not a medical doctor. Anything that we say on this show is for information purposes only. Just want to make sure we're covered there.
That's my personal opinion.
Yes. You brought up human growth hormone. What do you think about it? I had a friend start taking that the other day. And
mm-hmm.
she's 76.
Mm-hmm.
And she was overweight.
Mm-hmm.
But she was spry of mind. But she took that stuff, and I bet she lost 40 pounds. I could not. She's like a teenager now.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard, or I read somewhere, that it can cause diabetes. What do you know about that? I'm very interested in it.
Well, again, you know, it's sort of outside of a conversation about telomeres, but we're talking about aging and healthy aging and wellness. So, I mean, you know, certainly within that context, you'll get to some interesting stuff where you're making like very, very real trade-offs in health for well-being, right? We all know people who, what do you call it? Like, yeah, I mean, if the question was, you know, say you're increasing your risk of something negative happening, you know, a negative adverse health outcome, because you're taking a hormone that your body just simply isn't supposed to be making anymore. But in the meantime, you feel great, you have more energy, you can do things that you couldn't, you know, that you haven't been able to do for years, right? Knowing that we don't really know what all the risks are, because, you know, even human growth hormone, what, people have been doing that for about, what, 10 years now?
I don't know. See, I have to prepare every time for a radio show, so I'm not prepared for that, so I don't know. I keep hearing mm-hmm. that word, so with you being a geneticist, I just wanted to know what you thought since you brought it up.
Oh absolutely, sure. So, I mean, you know, it's a classic case of, if people are willing to, you know, I mean, like think of just drinking coffee, right? Right? You know, people take it for the experience of subjective well-being, knowing that there's some risks associated with taking drinking coffee. You know, something as simple as that. You know, people, I think, you know, people at this point owe it to themselves to self-educate and sort of own their life. And, you know, if they're going to take a... was 40 pounds, and she managed to not get diabetes from it. Boy, more power to her. Right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, she should, I think, from an ethical standpoint, she should have known the risks going into it, and she has to own those risks if she accedes to the to the treatments.
Okay, I was just curious. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just interesting to me, everything that's out there. Okay, back to telomeres. I'm sorry. Is there... I know that sugars are important in the body, especially when it comes to, the tops of the cells and sending and transmitting messages, the glyconutrients.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or is there a role in that in telomeres?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, there's a pretty great guy who's kind of popularizing, he's sort of popularizing anti-aging research named Aubrey de Grey. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's big on negligible senescence and sort of anti-aging, anti-aging strategies and sort of enabling the technologies that will, that will sort of get us closer down the road to, you know, developing really effective anti-aging treatments. And one of the, and sort of he has this philosophy that there's only seven ways that cells age. Seven and only seven ways that cells are aging. And that if you could address all of those, then, you know, people could more or less, live indefinitely, or at least would be free from the sort of harsher ravages of aging. Right? And one of them, like one of the ways in which cells age, is called, AGEs, or Advanced Glycosylation End Products. And basically what that is sugar molecules get slapped onto the edge. Like, your body makes proteins. Your cells have these little mini factories in them called ribosomes, and they manufacture proteins and enzymes. And they sort of, they do a lot of the work in your cell. Like, they're sort of, you know, the workers of your cell. But some of them are involved in export. Like, they get made in your cells, and then they get sent somewhere else. You know, either they're messengers or they're, or your body has, you know, things that are being produced that are being sent out. So sugar molecules, get slapped onto them, and it's sort of like the zip code for mailing something, right? Your cells might manufacture something, oh, it's gotta get sent to the liver, so sugar molecules will be attached to the end of them, and they'll go out and they'll get sent to the right place. Well, it turns out your body, like, accumulates this stuff, and it's not very good at breaking it down. And so these AGEs, these advanced glycosylation end products, just start accumulating. And apparently they'll sort of wrap up your organs in cocoons. They'll kind of bind up your cells so they can't kind of move around or do a lot of their functions. Or they won't function as effectively. And so you can imagine, like, all of your individual cells or all your individual organs, just sort of cocooned in sugars. And this is an issue, particularly with people with poor kidney function. Apparently, it's a big, like, AGEs are apparently a big issue in terms of...
Is there a testing for that? Do you do that?
Well, it's one of the things we're thinking about developing. I mean, it's pretty, again, this is, oh, man, as advanced as telomere testing is, boy, testing for AGEs would really be, we'd really be out on the edge for this one. But it's one of the things we've been thinking about developing, at least in terms of developing, like, an anti-aging panel or a cellular aging panel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the clinical relevance of it, like I said, it's relatively limited. Like, you know, it shows up pretty, you know, we know it accumulates over time, we know it degrades function, and, you know, again, only in people who are, you know, going through sort of renal failure does it have strong clinical correlations with more morbidity and mortality. It's not, you know, the sort of thing that, you know, for that population it's important, but I'm not sure what, you know, because, again, we're sort of market-driven, I'm not sure what the market is for developing that kind of test. But I think in terms of developing an overall anti-aging approach, that might be important.
Okay, so
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting.
Oh, no, sure.
Okay,
but I mean, But I mean, sugar consumption and AGE accumulation or advanced glycosylation end product accumulation, there's probably a correlation there.
Very interesting. So you would want to, let me see how to ask this question. You know that, what was that, tons of things. Now, there's many like the nutrients that pop in my head. That be a thing to help it then, or should you stay away from those kind of sugar products? They don't metabolize like simple sugars, though, right?
Oh, you mean like the, what do you call it? Sorry, you're kind of breaking up a little bit on me. You're basically saying our sugar substitutes, like what's the...
I was talking about the healthy sugars that, you know, I can't, for some reason, it's been so long since I've talked that I can't think of all the names or anything, but you know the little hairs that stand out on cells that send the signaling? What do you call those things?
Oh, I'm not sure where you're going with that. But I mean, if the question is like, you mean, I mean, I guess if the question becomes, you know, like, are there healthier sugars and less healthier sugars? I just have to go, you know, I haven't really, you know, it's a little bit outside of my field of expertise. I, you know, if we offer the test, oh man, are we going to get kind of heads and shoulders deep into this stuff and kind of figure out what the particulars are. But, I mean, I know of it, but I'm not an expert.
Okay, that's all right then. Let's go. I noticed on some of your information you talk about pharmacologic treatments known to slow telomere aging.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I have to say I'm just kind of shocked that any pharmacologic thing could help anything since it's all synthetic. But do they really help it?
Well, I mean, the one I'm aware of is again TA65, and that is it's a fairly specific telomerase activator, and it is based on, if I'm getting this right, oh man, if I'm not, I'll hear from those guys. but if I'm getting this right, it's an active subcompound from astragalus root, which is derived, you know, which is a kind of a qi balancer, a qi tonifier from traditional Chinese medicine. But it turns out one of the compounds in it is a relatively specific, and I guess fairly weak in its natural state. But you know, if you isolate the specific molecule and you concentrate it down, it's very relatively specific at activating the enzyme telomerase. So their treatment, in just the same way that what I guess aspirin was originally extracted from tree bark, right?
All right, now I want to talk about the pharmacologic treatments. I didn't even know you were going to tell me that, so that was a benefit to what you were just asking.
Cool.
Make my sentence clear, but on your webpage you say what pharmacologic treatments are known to slow telomere aging, and you got angiotensin, renin inhibitors, statins.
Okay.
I think pharmacology is dangerous because it's all synthetic. So I was surprised that this could slow telomere aging. Can you tell me, or bioidentical hormones, do you mean any bioidentical hormones, synthetic hormones? Do you mean those most close to the structure of our own hormones that are natural? What do you mean by these things?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question.
Are you okay with
that? Yeah, I went in a totally different direction, but yeah, I'm happy to.
I know, I'm glad you did though, because I didn't know what you were telling me, and I'm glad to know it.
Sure. Yeah, I was kind of curious about, you know, what the mechanism was that myself, so I went digging through the literature. And this is kind of what I think is going on with the sort of high blood pressure medication. So imagine you've got high blood pressure, and you've got blood, and it's moving through your veins and your arteries, right? And you've got high blood pressure, so it's moving through at a fairly high rate, almost like you had a hose, and you were sticking your thumb on the, sticking your thumb over the end of a hose.
Yeah, making it squirt hard.
Yeah, making it squirt hard, so it's under more pressure, right? So it's going faster and faster, and, you know, you can imagine kind of stripping stuff. You know, when you're using your hose to, like, strip dirt off a car, something like that, you know, you add that extra pressure. So that's the analogy I kind of want in your head. Well, it turns out if you have high blood pressure, your veins and your arteries, like the endothelial, the cells that line your veins and arteries, like, they're getting stripped off all of the time under high blood pressure, right? In just the same way, like I said, if you were blasting dirt off your car with a high-pressure hose,
right?
Like, you know, in the same way, cells are sort of weakly adherent, and the high blood pressure is stripping them off. And because it's stripping them off, the surrounding cells, the cells that are, you know, that don't get stripped off, they've got to continue to repair, they've got to continue to divide to replace those cells. So if you're under high blood pressure, again, you're stripping cells off of your, off of the insides of the tubing of your veins and arteries. And so anytime cells have to divide, their telomeres are going to get shorter. So I think the mechanism for, again, taking blood pressure medication, if you have high blood pressure, is that it will reduce the amount of wear and tear on the insides of your veins and arteries.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay.
And as a result, it'll reduce the rate of telomere loss. So that's the thinking behind that.
Okay.
I know that there's an association between, I believe it's estrogen replacement therapies,
mm-hmm.
and estrogen is thought to be somewhat protective of telomeres. I'm not really that sure what the mechanism is.
Which estrogen?
Again, like the paper I read on it, this is, you know, if you really want to know, you know, it's one of the things where you can Google and go to PubMed, which is the, you know, kind of repository of that. But I mean, like, I think it was as specific as, one of those large studies where they, you know, survey 5,000 people and they look at a bunch of different behaviors and then you do the correlations. And so I think it was a group of, you know, 5,000 nurses or something like that, where it turned out that the ones that were on, you know, the ones that ticked the box that said, yeah, I'm on hormone replacement therapy,
okay.
when they checked their telomeres, there was a protective effect. I think that's as much as is known, but I'm sure there'll be.
I'm good. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be follow-up papers, but I don't think there's a lot of detail on it at this point.
Okay, I'd like to. You know that email I sent you from my friend?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to. Here are some questions he has for my friends who have conventional doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to read some of his emails.
I'm surprised you can read those on the air, to be honest.
He says, just ask for evidence-based research, not mm-hmm. just some unproven theory. For example, they say that trace elements inside the cells are more valuable than serum levels. Where's the proof?
Mm-hmm.
So, you remember that email. So how can we answer people who have those kinds of questions? What do we have to say?
Oh, sure. Well, look, the easiest thing to say is, like, you know, here we're discussing, you know, we've got an hour, we're on a radio show, where we want to cover a lot of material, right? Anybody who wants to go into any in-depth on this can do one of two things. They can either get on the internet and fire up Google and do some research, you know, go to PubMed, get to work. Our webpage, which let me plug that again real quick, www.spectracell.com, right? Our webpage has links to supporting research. So if they want to look at research specific to what we're doing, there's certainly, there's no firewalls, there's no passwords. They can go onto our webpage, click on research, and see the supportive work. The original data for the nutrient testing, which is what he had questions about, was published in Proceedings of the National Academies of Sciences, which is an extremely well-respected peer-reviewed scientific journal. I believe it has an overall ranking. Journals are ranked by sort of kind of an internal relevance rating, but I think it's one of the A-list journals. I mean, it's one of the most widely respected scientific journals in the country. And so that's where this data was validated and reported out initially. In terms of clinical relevance, there are a number of papers. I think a couple of them are linked to on the webpage. But, you know, hopefully we'll address some of their concerns. That said and done, he's entitled to his skepticism, but he's not entitled to his facts. So if he wants more information, that'd be the place to go.
Well, you got to start somewhere when you're on the edge, you know, and you guys have certainly started that somewhere. That's my opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I looked at PubMed on telomeres today, and there was about 7,700 papers on that. So, you know, that's peer-reviewed scientific journals. You go to PubMed, you type in telomeres, you'll get that. If you type in nutrition, I think last year there was something like 16,000 papers published.
Okay.
So the idea that these are important, you know, I don't think it's a rough sell, but, you know, people are entitled to their skepticism, sure.
I wanted to do it, that's for sure. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be the standard probably within 10 years. I wonder, what do insurance companies say about it?
Well, right now, again, we're way ahead of a lot of, a lot of clinicians. We developed the assay, because some of our clients, really said, this would be amazing. We think it'd really make a lot of sense for our practice. It's a way that you can show people, like, literally the effect of lifestyle on their cells.
Mm-hmm.
How hard they're aging, how fast they're aging. And it's another way to really point out, not only do you need to fix yourself up, but here's some internal evidence that you're really chewing yourself up. Everybody knows people, right? Everyone knows someone who looks great for their age. They've got a lot of energy, they're vital, they're robust, they're doing great. And conversely, everyone knows people who are just, they're just, the warranty is up and they're just falling apart and they've got a zillion health issues, right? And they, maybe they're 30, but they feel like they're 70, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Everybody knows people at both of those extremes. And sure, there's the appearance base, how do you look, right? But that's just literally skin deep. This stuff goes to the core at the cellular level. How is that process going? And so it's a really useful tool. Some clinicians find it's a really useful tool.
I have friends that think it's fabulous, by the way. It's not all my friends are the skeptics. Now, before we get through, it's 8:42 and we're over at 5 till. I'm going to give you time to go back and say whatever you want to say like we did last week. But since you're so on the edge and you do genetics and I find that so fascinating, I want to ask you, what other studies or research or information is out there that you know about that we don't know about that's interesting about anti-aging or anything involving genetics, consciousness, anti-aging? What else do you know?
Oh, sure.
There's got to be something that you know because that's your passion.
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to talk about that. There's two things that really excite me. I just think, I'm kind of interested in anti-aging and sort of, life extension and kind of the, at the mechanistic kind of engineering level. Like, that's the sort of stuff I've got my eyes on. And so, I've been really intrigued by the advances in regenerative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
The research has finally developed a way, I guess they can take skin cells and de-differentiate them into stem cells, right? And for listeners who don't know, stem cells are sort of the precursors to all the cells in your body, and so we've been really looking for ways to make what's called a pluripotent stem cell, a cell that can be, let's say you need a new kidney, well, let's grow those cells into a kidney, or let's say you need a liver, well, these cells, if they get transplanted to your liver, they'll pick up the local hormonal and like cellular interactive cues, and they'll become liver cells. Like, so they literally can be used to replace any cell in your body. And researchers have very recently developed a way to do that using skin cells. So they could, take a swab of your skin, take those skin cells to a laboratory, de-differentiate them, from skin cells back to the more generalized stem cells, and eventually use those to replace some of the body parts that have gone ill.
Who's doing that, do you know?
I really don't know. This is the stuff of the last 2 years, so it's at the bench research level where people, report, hey, we have the capacity to do that. But I would expect that within the next, a couple of years, 3 years, 5 years tops, there'll be replacement clinical regimens being developed and implemented and, that process is ongoing, and I think that's really fascinating.
I have a question about that. When you have, somebody said this to me one time, so I just want to know a little bit more. When you have a wound, that fluid that it seats, that makes the scab, does that have stem cells in it?
I'm really not up on this is the, I'm not a clinician. I'm going to wear the I'm not a clinician card.
Okay. All right, then tell me your second thing that you said that was out there that you're keeping your eye on.
Oh, I think this is so cool. So tissue engineering and this is, you know, sort of similar, but it's sort of, you know, it's similar but slightly different technology. So people have figured out how to make these sort of biodegradable tissue scaffolds, right, where they can make a scaffolding instead of a tissue that cells will simply eat.
I don't know what that is. A tissue, help me understand a little better.
Oh, sure. Imagine a plastic mold, say, and it looks exactly like a heart.
Oh.
Okay. And you could put cells on it, and the cells would just sort of adhere to the outside of it in the exact shape of a heart, right? And eventually, like, they'd use the scaffolding, they'd use that underlying shape, and they'd eat it to sort of grow and divide with.
Wow.
And what would be left would be a cell shaped exactly like a heart, right?
That's
like
amazing.
Or sort of a cellular structure. Well, they've recently done that with heart muscle cells. They've run it through a modified inkjet printer. So it's secreting cells basically one cell at a time on a 3D printer. And they've taken that scaffolding, made a heart out of heart cells, a heart-shaped object out of heart cells.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
All the cells synchronize. They synchronize their motion because apparently that's something that cardiac cells do, I guess. And they made a beating heart. They printed one.
Does it come out at the age of the person of the cells they got, or does it come out a young heart or young cells?
Well,
does that make sense?
Yeah. One of the issues, and it's one of the reasons why telomere testing is going to get more and more use as this technology becomes more advanced. One of the issues is if you take someone's stem cells, say you take a Q-tip full of cells, a very small, kind of microscopic, a few thousand cells, and you want to make an organ, you know, which is going to maybe hundreds of thousands of cells, right? You've got to propagate those cells many, 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 many times. You've got to grow them, right? You've got to get them to grow and divide a lot. And so we suspect that, shortened telomeres, like if you take it from a source that has shortened telomeres, they'll be even shorter after you propagate them. And so the question becomes, well, how durable will these replacement organs be over time, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you took the cells from someone who's 70 years old, and maybe they've, haven't been in the best of health, or haven't looked after themselves very well, so their telomeres are already, the telomeres from the cells from which you make the stem cells are getting shorter, and you make them divide a zillion times, so you have enough cells to make replacement tissue with, they may end up being so short that the organ that you're going to replace with the person is already almost completely senescent.
So I guess that's why people talk about keeping their umbilical cords or something when they have a child. They would have those things, I guess. New ones, relatively younger ones anyway.
Absolutely. And so that's going to be, going forward as we develop, like, really practical anti-aging therapies, right, as people get really deep into this stuff, those are the sorts of considerations that are going to come up.
That's so fascinating. And how long... And I know what you're going to tell me here, but I'm going to ask anyway. How long do you think it would, or how long do they think it would take to grow a whole heart or a whole organ? Months, years?
Well, it's actually a fairly fast process. You can compel cells to propagate with a doubling rate of something like, 18 to 36 hours. So you can get a lot of cells really fast in a fairly short amount of time.
So, but it would take millions, I guess, to make a heart, right? So,
just giving me an
idea. Days, weeks, months?
Well, at an exponential rate of increase, right? If it's, if you're doubling every time it doubles, right? At that rate, you might have enough cells to make a replacement system in a month, 6 weeks.
That's amazing.
So imagine someone with congestive heart failure going in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid you're going to need a new heart. How does March look for you?
Yeah. It's amazing, though, Jonathan. Gosh, it's just amazing. All right, you got 5 minutes. What do you want to talk about that we haven't talked about that you want to say or about? Anything you want to talk about?
Oh, sure. Well, I guess what I'd say is that... we don't work in a vacuum. You know, that lots of other people are kind of developing these technologies. You know, we're very, very happy to be, you know, one of the first laboratories in the country that's offering telomere testing at a commercial level. You know, but certainly there'll be other people doing this too. That, you know, over time, I think this technology is going to mainstream. Because whether people are aging poorly or whether they're aging very, very well, everybody's aging. And the idea that for some reason that we should just all sort of kind of grin and bear it, you know, that we should sort of subject ourselves to the ravages and the illnesses and sort of the, you know, kind of the negative aspects of aging, you know, the sort of philosophical stoicism that comes from that, like, I just don't think that there's, given where we are in our current level of research and, you know, where this is all going, like, I think there's a lot of reason to be very, very optimistic about what the future holds. You know, they're developing vaccines for Alzheimer's. You know, we're making new scientific discoveries every day in terms of, you know, what we discussed a little bit today about repair and replacement and regeneration. And, you know, so you know, I don't think that there's not going to be no... that there isn't going to be no choice, right? Life is all about choices. We can live healthier and plan to have a healthier future. We can live as if, you know, the future doesn't matter and see where, and see how, where we are when that future arrives. Like, that's really our choice to make.
And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me like your testing and your, perspective for the future is about what can you do to get yourself healthy via natural channels through healthy nutrition? Because I don't care about vaccines for Alzheimer's. I mean, first thing that came to my mind was, isn't it something that they think is dopamine? Then why don't they do something to make their dopamine better, levels better, rather than, you know what I mean, give them
neurotransmitters.
But you guys are doing it naturally, right?
Mm-hmm. There's you know, people are going to develop a lot of different approaches to this. You know, once we understand what's going on, once we really, you know, kind of dig down and know the fundamental underlying mechanism of the issues associated with a disease state or a healthy state, then, you know, then we'll be able to develop effective approaches to it. You know, the bottom line on telomere testing, you know, people have shortened telomeres or they have long telomeres. You know, what we're telling people is something they already kind of know. You know, like, people need to get a hold of their inflammatory state, right? And, you know, people need to educate themselves on, you know, how to live a heart healthy lifestyle. People need to get out and exercise and they'll feel better. People need to eat well, right? In a certain sense, we're providing the underlying kind of, you know, the underlying assays that highlight those particular ways and, you know, identifying the most optimal ways to get there from here. But, you know, it should come to no surprise if I said, wow, you know, people need to, you know, avoid stressors and live well. You know, I don't think anyone's going to be too surprised by that.
I have one question, and I warned you before we came on the air that I wanted to ask you. So if you don't know and you don't have any comment, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Relative to human consciousness, and what do I mean by that? The chi that some scientists, some physicists think magnesium is chi, that spark of light deep down in the mitochondria. Is there any connection that you've seen at all with the chi of life or photons and the telomeres?
What?
Do you see the light being held in better on the ones that have the longer cap? Do you see anything?
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, my cousin is a practitioner of traditional Chinese medicine, and so we do a lot of sort of East meets West kind of conversation.
Ooh, I would love that.
Yeah, they can get, we're passionate guys, so, you know, like we do have frank exchanges of opinion. What can I say? Like, I can give you the science, you know, here's a scientific answer that probably won't address your question.
And well, we've got about 2 or 3 minutes, so.
Yeah, it is this. Vitamin D deficiencies are associated with foreshortened telomeres, right? People who don't get enough sunlight, they don't produce their own endogenous vitamin D, right? Vitamin D protects your cells. If your cells aren't protective, again, this gets back to the oxidative damage, your telomeres will become foreshortened. And so there's a weird mechanistic relationship between light, in this case, getting sunlight and protecting your telomeres.
Interesting.
In terms of...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. No, go.
Sure. In terms of qi, that's just outside of our realm of expertise, our schemes of measurement, and so I can't really comment on it.
I suspect you'll see it one day. I just think that's what you're doing is so amazing.
Well, it just
great
don't sound
have
like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Young and open-minded people coming up like you. Thank you for all that you do and for listening to people and for pursuing your passion.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It was a real treat. You mind if I plug the webpage again?
Go right ahead. I was just about to do that.
Oh, fantastic. Well, if people have any questions about anything we discussed this week or last week, they're totally welcome to go to our webpage. It's www.spectracell.com. That's spectracell.com. And we've got lots of contact information, lots of research information, and we'd love to hear from you.
And if anybody has questions, you can send, if last resort, you can send me the email, and I'll forward it to Nicole, and she can get it to Dr. Stein. Thank you, Dr. Stein. I look forward to having Dr. Troop next weekend, and thank you for taking the time for me and my listeners. Good night.
Thanks. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health. Integral Health. Integral Health. You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.